So it's been a busy month for us, and will be a busy few weeks with birthdays, etc. A few milestones,
A
actually.
few more stones, yeah.
Yeah, not
Get
mine, because it was my birthday recently, and I turned the grand old age of 49. But
Yeah,
my wife.
if you had birthdays plural, you would be the queen.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're
But
not.
my wife's birthday's coming up. She's 50 this year, and actually,
You
it's our.
shouldn't tell people that.
Oh, no,
She'll
I
kill you if
know.
she listens to this.
But it's also our 25th wedding anniversary, so we're actually going to go and sample the delights of Bishopstow in Warminster for
Fantastic.
a
We'll all
nice
be
weekend
there.
away.
We'll all be there
Yeah,
to to
and
congratulate you.
it's quite good there because we can when we want to just go for a stroll, we can just walk up Scratchbury Camp and
Yeah.
Battlesbury.
And a little bit further, you can go and count the cows at
Yeah,
Bunscombe Bottom.
yeah. It's funny as well because when we initially were looking at this ahead a few years ago, we thought, well, in 2021 we're going to hit these milestones, so let's book a trip to Rome. And that's been totally
No.
kiboshed, hasn't it, this year? So anyway, I will spend my money in Wiltshire. Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are mostly hidden. I've lost count of where we are, so I won't go through which number this is, but this is like an
15.
out.
This is number
15!
15. Yeah.
15. But this one's a bit like an out-of-body experience because as we're talking these words, we are obviously in at a point in time, but we actually recorded this one probably in May.
Yeah. And
Knowing
well,
you would be on holiday.
yes, part of it in May, but yeah, so as you listen to this, I'm not here.
Yeah, you're, as I say, this it's like an out of body experience. You aren't here, but you are.
Yeah, I'm here in spirit. But, yeah,
Where are
I
you going to
sh
be? Scotland, isn't it, or somewhere?
well, yeah, I'm going to be nearer to Norway than London at one point. So we're going to Shetland, first of all, and then sort of travelling through Shetland and then across to Orkney for a sort of spell there, and then back to the mainland and wending our way south. So by the time I get back to Wiltshire, I shall probably be the colour of rust, because I'm sure it's going to rain for the 2.5 weeks that we're away,
Yeah. Well, you never know.
as it did when I went to the Hebrides last year. It never
Yeah,
stopped. So.
you never know. You never know. But we'll be holding the fort in Wiltshire because, as I say, we already recorded this one a while ago and we actually had our first guest. So that will be
Yeah, which
interesting.
we'll hear that in a minute. I will, if I may, do a final plug for More Broken Studios. Listen to episode 14 for all the gory details. But whilst I'm away, More Broken Studios continues, and Steve Dixon and Alan Cowley and my work will still be on the walls in our gallery at Roundway. So I think that's basically the first 3 weekends
Yep.
in July, but that will still be going on. So.
Yeah, and also a plug for the forthcoming, the next Hidden Wiltshire Walks. At the time of hearing this, we will have done the Box Hill one. We've got the 24th of July as Bratton and Luckham Springs. I think quite a few tickets have already gone for that. So if you've got one, it'd be great to see you there. 14th of August is the Hills Above Eddington. So those two are kind of quite related. It's going to be looking at different aspects of the same sort of area. So welcome to come along. All the links to that are on the website. So this week we are heading over to the vast expanse of Salisbury Plain. But we couldn't possibly cover it all in one podcast, so we're going to focus in on a sort of couple of areas. And to do that, we've actually got a guest. We have Mr. Steve Dewey. So welcome.
The legendary
Yeah.
Steve Dewey.
Now, Steve has done quite a few articles for the Hidden Wiltshire website, and quite a few, well, at least two of them are focused on Salisbury Plain because he does explore it quite a lot. So welcome to the Hidden Wiltshire podcast, Steve.
Hello.
So do you want to just quickly explain who on earth you are to the listeners?
I am Steve Dewey, and I take photographs around Salisbury Plain. It's not my job. It's a hobby, like for most people. Most of my explorations are to do photography. I'm not a walker like you guys. I'm a rambler in a car looking for photographs. And
Well, you're a brave rambler in a car because many roads in Salisbury Plain are a little bit testy for most
yeah, well,
cars,
I do
right?
have a four-wheel drive. I don't just have a car. And
Yeah. Actually, a couple of times when I've been out in Salisbury Plain, I've seen like an old couple in a standard hatchback trying, for instance, go across Blackheath, and thought, oh, I'm not sure they're going to manage that. But well, maybe they will, but their car might not survive the
Yeah,
heat.
it can be done, and I have seen many a person driving an ordinary car on the gravel tracks of Salisbury Plain. And like you, I wonder how long their cars will last. I've got through something like 10 off-roaders in the last 10 years, just from vibrations making everything fall off.
I did notice though, Steve. I saw a picture of you. You posted a picture of your car, and there's no winch. Don't you need a winch where you go?
If you're a real hardcore off-roader who actually goes into those ridiculous ruts, it would be good to have a winch.
Yeah.
But I learned my lesson several years ago that many of the ruts with puddles on Salisbury Plain, they have hidden depths.
Yes,
And they're
they
not the
do.
kind of hidden depths I have. They're the kind of hidden depths that stop your car going. So I don't explore them anymore.
No, very wise.
Yeah,
Or
yeah.
take a long stick with you and poke it in the puddle before you drive through it.
Do you know the bit by Casterly Castle
Yeah,
where the
yeah.
track goes, the Lark Hill track goes by, and then you can see off to your right if you're heading towards Lark Hill,
Yeah.
a bunch of chalky tracks where off-roaders go down through there. And for 3 weekends in a row, I went to Salisbury Plain, and somebody was stuck in there. It's a stuck Land Rover Magnet.
It is, yeah,
An unforgiving
and
place.
no surprises either. It's horrendous. So,
So, Steve, I was just going to ask if you born and bred in Wiltshire? Are you?
I was born in Bradford-on-Avon and lived in Warminster till I was 19, and then went off to, get educated and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
Just
so
a
you're a true Wiltshire person then, unlike
Oh, yeah, I'm a
myself and Paul.
Moonrigger. Hi.
A Moonraker.
Yeah.
So, what's all this about UFOs then, Steve? What's that all about?
Oh, no, don't get me there, please. Don't. I am a skeptic, which means that most people are don't listen to me. They just don't listen to me,
Yeah, it's a bit of a minefield, the UFO world. I discovered that when I captured a in inverted commas a UFO on my drone a few years ago, and it attracted all sorts of nonsense.
I mean, the problem is that the world divides quite substantially into people who believe in UFOs with a fervor, and skeptics like me, who, are a bit more, well, skeptical. There's no other word for it. We're skeptical.
But you've written books on the subject, haven't you?
I have written skeptical books on the subject. I say
Right.
that knowing that once people know they're skeptical, nobody will buy them because very few people buy skeptical books. If you want to make money in the UFO world, of which there is not much, it must be said. But if you do want to make money in the UFO world, books about, that believe in them, that say they're probably real and they're probably alien, and will sell many more than a skeptical book.
So, are these books still available?
Yes, because they, well, two of them are privately published anyway, because try getting a skeptical book published. And One was taken up by a small publisher in the States who does it print on demand, so it's just always there.
So if you go to Amazon,
you'll find them.
Okay. So if we put a link in the show notes that we put on the website,
indeed,
people will be able to buy them. Yeah. Excellent.
I will also mention, because I don't often mention this, because I suffer quite a lot from feeling pretentious and having imposter syndrome and all kinds. I also write novels, you know.
Oh, wow.
And they're all based in Wiltshire. So, and they're all based around that milieu, and they're all kind of historical novels, because write what you know, and it's very... Although I'm sceptical, the UFO world is very entertaining in that respect.
Well, perhaps sort of offline, we'll get a selection of links and the ones
I can just mention to the
listeners.
Yeah, I can just give you a link to my author page on Amazon, and that will list all of them.
Perfect.
Brilliant.
We'll do that. Good.
Salisbury Plain. Now, it's not a place probably that lends itself to walking, because it's huge, although you can do little bits and pieces, but it does lend itself to driving in the right car, like you said. But much of it is either off limits or just not known. And the thing that intrigued me about some of your wanderings is that as you've gone around these places that are not really that well known and the tracks are quite old and underused, some of them used to be quite almost like main roads in the distant past. So one of the things that really intrigued me was when you made that post on the website about Blackheath, because when you did it, I kind of scratched my head and thought, what on earth is Blackheath? I've never heard of it. But the article was really intriguing, and there is a road that takes you through there, which is open for part of the year. I mean, how did you find that?
I found it because I was just drifting around. I mean, another part of my history is that because I lived in Warminster, I was on the edge of the Western Plain. And anybody who knows the plain knows that the Western Plain has always been red flagged. It's just always red flagged. There's no, technically, there's no paths through it. It's very dangerous and blah, blah. Of course, when you're kids, I mean, I never did because I lived too far away, but I know people who just used to go into the plain and, you know, get bullets and stuff. It's part of the growing up of being in Wiltshire, is sneaking into the plain and getting stuff. But because I didn't know there were any paths, I always thought of the whole plain as kind of being off limits, because I only knew the western part really well. And it wasn't until I lived in Marlborough and started driving between the two, Westbury area, Warminster area, and back to Marlborough, that I realised that if I followed the northern route, you could see little signposts saying byway, pointing into the middle of the plain. And as I had an off-roader, eventually I thought, I might as well drive in and see what's in there.
And just for clarification for people who are wondering what, you know, where the Western Plain is, I mean, that basically what we're talking about there is the area around Imber, which we've featured on the podcast before. And as you say, I mean, it's a live firing area, so is almost permanently red flagged, i.e. no admittance.
Yes, apart from when Imber's open, I don't think they ever take the red flags
now. No, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the western side, but that eastern side is pretty much accessible.
Yeah, well,
most of the time.
Yeah, so there's three parts. There's the western, the central, and the eastern.
Right.
So the central is open on the northern ridgeway all of the time.
Yeah.
And the southern flank around Coatpill Down, Shrewton, Chitton, all of those. There are areas down there which are open all the time as well. The Blackheath closes because it's the target area for Lark Hill Artillery.
So Blackheath is split into two. You've got to the west side, it's called West Town Impact Area. West Down, sorry. And then to the east, it's the Lark Hill Impact Area.
Yes. Yeah.
That's Blackheath Road, it kind of cuts right down through the middle of the middle, live firing
yes,
area.
That, absolutely. I mean, it's a nice road, but you don't want to get off it, you know?
Yeah, and there are plenty of signs along it saying, not so many words, don't stray off the path or you might get blown up and die.
Yes, There's a lovely big shell or something. I don't know what it is, but when you go across Blackheath, about, if you go from the north end, about 2 miles down, and you look to the left, there's a lovely big thing that looks like a shell. It's just sitting there on the surface. And I often hope it's a dummy as I drive by, not a real one.
Well, I remember last year they closed the road for a bit because they were removing ordnance, apparently. And I remember when they opened it up again after that, I actually went for a walk along Blackheath. I parked at the south end by the finger post with the signs and just walked up. It wasn't a very interesting walk, to be honest. It's a place that's probably better to be driven through or ridden on road, ride on a bike or something, because it's quite a long, straight road through, you know, some flat lands and with some undulations. But it's not like you can do a circular walk around it. It's just a bloody long road from the south to the north. But I remember seeing dotted around occasionally that there was a little red flag just poked in the ground where presumably they marked it as to say, this is where you should come and collect this ordnance from.
That red flag worried me, it must be said, because I've been up down there a lot. And I used to think, is this because they marked it and picked something up, or they marked it and forgot something?
Yeah.
That's why the flag's still there.
Yeah.
What they do in theory is, so when they've been live firing, because I'm, as you know, I'm shooting, so I'm right on the edge of this area. They'll finish the firing, but for several days after, the red flags stay up, because that's when they're going around and checking that there's no ordnance, unexploded ordnance, on things like that central road, which I don't know what the official name is, but we call it the Spine Road, that goes down the middle of the plain between Westdown and Larkhill. So they spend a couple of days sort of checking those rights of way, and then they'll remove the red flags. So I haven't been up yet this weekend, but I imagine that, you know, probably today the flags are down and that road is, you know, may very well be open.
It's an interesting road though, isn't it? Because it's drivable, just probably if you got a 4x4.
Yeah.
You could probably get away with it on a bike. But the road is actually in a terrible state. I remember when I was talking about perhaps going to visit Paul, I think you sort of said to me, it is an absolute state, that road, and if you're taking a bike, be prepared to get off your bike and wheel it at various points.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is that a few years ago they made a sort of half-hearted attempt to fill some of the holes and resurface it, and they used stone, which it was too large a gauge. It was, you know, great big chunks of, not rocks, but they were quite large stones. And a mate of mine was working for Landmark at the time, and he was responsible for rights of way. And he told me that when they laid this stone, as they always have done, and then what they're supposed to do is come along and sort of crush it afterwards. And the contractors refused to crush it because they were concerned about setting off unexploded ordnance. So you've got these quite large pieces of stone, which on a bicycle are almost impossible to ride across. I mean, you just have to, you know, wheel your bike along the edge of it. I like Steve, I've got 4x4, and even in that, it's, you know, it's pretty heavy going. You do just get, I mean, your fillings get loosened as you're driving across it. But years ago, when I first moved here, you could drive across it in a road car. You know, the surface was much better.
Yeah. And I guess at some point it must have been probably a more, I don't know, better used road. I think it was more of a main road than it is now. Is that correct?
Yeah. Steve, do you know the sort of, you know, the historical use of that road?
It was a turnpike. So it was the main road at one point between Devizes and Salisbury. The fact that it was turnpike probably indicates that it was always in use as the main road from Salisbury to Devizes, and then when the opportunity to turnpike came along, it was one of the roads turnpiked by one of the trusts. I think it was possibly, actually I can't remember, I'm not going to make a wild ass.
But it's on the article you put on the website. You put an old map on there. I think it was Carey's map.
It might have been. Might have been.
And it's but it looks, when you look at the road on that map, it looks like the main road. It looks probably
It
better
is.
used
Well, yeah,
than
I mean,
some
to
of.
me, it's the main road. It's the most obvious main road as well, because the modern roads go around either the eastern flank of the plain or the western flank. They both, essentially, both modern roads go up valleys, watery valleys, one up the Till and one up the Avon. Yeah, the Blackheath really is a ridge road. It goes right across the watershed and keeps your feet dry.
And Glyn, you mentioned that finger post as you come from the south, well, either way, but it's as you come from the south going north, on your left, you've got an old finger post. And I think, Steve, I'm right in saying that says Devizes, and I can't remember which way it points to the
Devizes,
south.
Lavington, and
Yeah.
Salisbury. So the
Salisbury,
Lavington
yeah.
Road that comes in there was
Yeah.
also part of the Turnpike system and was
Yeah.
also a main road.
So
If you
that
actually
was a.
follow that road from Lavington up into Lavington, you can see that it goes straight on and heads on to Melksham. So
Yeah.
it's all part of the interconnected main roads of Wiltshire, as
So
it were.
that junction was presumably a fairly significant junction in years gone by, to have that finger post right out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, indeed, and it is one of the original turnpike finger posts as well. So nice cast iron finger post.
Yeah.
So a little bit of ancient history not being blown up there. It's nice to see.
Yeah.
And there is quite a lot of ancient history along that road as well, because you have got the odd tumulus, and there's a long barrow, isn't it, L Barrow, and earthworks.
Unfortunately, you can't get to any of them because,
No.
you risk getting your leg blown off.
Yeah.
Going to see anything, so you have to kind of admire everything from a distance
Yeah.
going along that road. I mean, that is a problem out for walkers and things like that. It's, as you say, it's just one long straight road. You could make it a circuit by going down to the finger post, going back up the Lavington Road, and then getting on the northern plain, on the northern ridgeway, and then going along that route. But it
Yeah,
is very.
I think I've mapped that out. It's about 9 or 10 miles, I think,
Is
around.
there? Yeah, it's quite a.
Yeah. So it's definitely doable.
So
And the photography up there is pretty amazing as well.
it is for kind of windswept open space
Yeah.
photography. Yeah, I mean, there's not much to focus on. It's not like you'll get good foregrounds, but big
Yeah.
sky photography is right up there.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a great spot for starling murmurations as well.
Oh,
You
yes.
get a lot of birders go up there, especially in the autumn, all sort of waiting for the murmurations, and it tends to happen along the southern end of that. I'm going to keep calling the spine road. Clearly, if it's red flagged, I mean, the starlings just carry on doing what starlings do, but you can't get anywhere near it when the flags are down. But sorry, when the flags are up, but when the flags are down, you can drive along there. You can get quite close to the murmurations, and there's some superb footage and photographs that have been taken from that road of the
Yes, it is very
murmurations.
good. And the good thing is you can get, because it's actually the gorses just down from the Red Horn of Burdett, about a mile down from the Red Horn of Burdett, which are called Churton gorses, I think. Yeah, Churton. And because they're there, they just chirp away, murmuring away, and you can get very close to it, and very close to that constant noise, which is a very interesting sound, just being very close to like 100,000 starlings, calling to each other. Also, if you've never been close to a starling murmuration coming into land, just hearing all of the starlings whooshing over your head as they head towards the gorses, or if they're actually, doing their flying murmurations, their clouds, as they come past you, hearing the sound of their wings, is a fascinating, it's a fascinating sound. And with the murmuration murmuring and the cloud whooshing, it's a delight.
And you can't hear any cars out there. No traffic. It's just
No,
a very peaceful place.
it's very peaceful. I was talking to a friend about this podcast, and I said, "Oh, we're going to talk about the Blackheath, and it's going to be very short because." Nobody knows anything historic about the Blackheath. He said, "What are you going to say?" And I was going to say, "Well, I'm going to say it's very lonely and empty. You do feel well, if there's nobody else walking out there or any cars driving by the time you've got about 2 miles down the Blackheath Road, down the Spine Road, you can't see very many habitations. I mean, if you look very hard, you might see a distant farm. It's one of the few places in any county, really, but in Wiltshire, in southern counties, that you feel very kind of alone. You know, it's...
Yeah, I know when I did that walk, when I got to around Churton Gorse, I just stopped and just looked around and listened, and I just thought, this must be the most remote place in Wiltshire. There's just nothing here. There's no sound.
Yeah.
It's wild. And
well, that you know, I think that's right. That's a great word to use. I mean, it's almost like the last remaining wilderness in Wiltshire.
Yeah. Yes. My brother went out there once at like six. He's a very early riser and went out there at 6 o'clock in the morning after I told him about it, so he could have a look around. It's in summer, and it was daylight by then. But he said it felt very spooky because it was so quiet.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't see anybody. Very rarely in the south half of the country do you get that kind of silence and stillness.
Yeah. So, Steve, the Northern Ridgeway that you mentioned earlier on, that is also, I believe, an ancient sort of trackway. Where does that go from and to?
Well, now you're talking. I mean, we could be here all day throwing up all kinds of speculative stuff. It's assumed that it's part of the general Ridgeway that goes from Seaton to Norfolk or wherever. I've forgotten the exact termination of it. So that bit of the Northern Ridgeway heads from Gore Cross and heads towards, well, Casterly Castle, if you know where Casterly Castle is, anyway. You can find it on maps.
Yeah.
It all becomes a bit dubious and mixed up then, because ultimately it wants to head towards Walker's Hill on the Pusey Downs. So I think you guys have both written blogs about that area of Northern Wiltshire.
Yeah.
So if you look on maps, you can see that the road is marked with Ridgeway and Ickney all the way as it goes across the Pusey Downs there. And then it heads off towards West Kennet and then up by Avebury and then on and on. The trouble is that on the northern ridge of Salisbury Plain, when it gets to a position just above Charlton, it all becomes a bit, in my opinion, a bit dubious about where it leaves the plain and then heads towards Walker's Hill. Various books I've read suggest that it goes by, I forgot the name of it, something Banks. Anyway, above Charlton, there's a small historic camp or stockade, which I've forgotten the name of.
Yes, I know what you mean, and I can't remember either. No. I've seen it on the map. Yeah. Actually, I've got a big map here, actually. I'll have a look whilst you're thinking.
Okay, you carry on. And so it's just above Wilsford and Charlton and all those places. There's a bridleway that goes by it. And so a couple of authors have suggested that it turns off there, but it seems really weird to me because it looks like you carry on miles, like 2 miles further than you have to get to there, and then hoik a sharp right and head off towards Walker's Hills. And it's not even straight towards Walker's Hill. It's slightly back on yourself, and that seems slightly mad to me. So my unattested and unevidenced idea is that it begins to drift down into the vale somewhere around Redhorn Burdett. And, you know, one day when I've retired, I'll start researching it properly.
So I think that name you were looking for, I think, is Broadbury Banks.
That's it. Begins with a B. I could remember it began with a B, but couldn't quite remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
this whole sort of Ridgeway route, I know, is there's some, not controversy, that's too strong a word, but some debate about A, where it goes, and B, whether it really exists as a single defined route.
Yes.
And I'm sure, I can't remember the name of the book, but you know, I've got a book. Actually, it's a neighbour lent it to me about a year ago, and I've still got it. And it's, I think it's just called The Ridgeway. And my neighbour, who is well, he's currently employed by the BBC, but he said when he retires, he's going to write a book, another book about the Ridgeway, because he's got some fairly firm ideas that contradict some of the sort of existing knowledge on it. And his theory is, which I'm inclined to agree with, is that it wasn't like the M4. It wasn't, you know, this is a road that goes from A to B. This is a whole series of different tracks, ancient trackways, which were interconnected with branches going off here, there and everywhere. But there was no central core like there is a modern day A road or motorway. It's just a series of tracks that people connected up over the millennia.
Yes.
As they travelled around.
Which, of course, could have been used for some long-distance travel. Because they, you know, you could say, where shall I go next?
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, I'll take that bit of road up there. And so, you know, became used over time.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree. The idea that there was this one long road and it was all called the Ridgeway and everybody knew it was the Ridgeway and take that, start there and off you go, seems somewhat... say dubious, but that flies in the face of many, many scholars who said this, but that is what happens. So it seems, I can't think of a good word. I'm wordless, which is unusual for me.
But going back to these tracks and roads that go across the Salisbury Plain, you know, it's hard sometimes to imagine that these gravel roads were, you know, proper routes in the past. But one thing that does give it away, a little tell, which you can find at various points along some of these tracks, is the odd milestone. And
yes,
that leads on to a discussion about something else you wrote about on the Hidden Wiltshire website, which was called the Old Slow Coach Road, which I think when you started the research, it all was kicked off by this milestone that you found over towards the Eddington side of the plane. Is that right?
Yeah, saw is a bit, because if you say find, it makes it sound as though I discovered one.
Yeah,
I was driving up. This was one time when I was driving back from my brother's house in Westbury, and so I came up. I might even have come up Salisbury Hollow onto the road above Colston, and I noticed a milestone. In fact, I think that might be the first milestone. I noticed the one above Salisbury Hollow, which is above Tinhead.
Yeah.
And I saw that milestone. I thought, oh, a milestone. Didn't know any milestones up here. So I took a photograph, could see what was written on it, just about. And I thought, well, must be more milestones. And forgot about it as I was driving on. But when I got home and developed the photographs, as it were, processed the photographs, I thought I must find out if there's more. So I looked on the map, and sure enough, on that road, from Tinhead above Colston towards New Zealand camp and then down to Thorncroft, there was one more, and that got me thinking about the road. Where did the road go? And you know, so I did a bit of research and found out that it was a road from Salisbury to Bath, and in one of the Victoria County history write-ups, I can't remember which one, it might have been the one for Colston Parish, whatever Colston, I don't know if Colston is a parish or whether it's in a parish. But it was called the Old Slow Coach Road, and I like the name, you know, they use that phrase. Well, I don't know whether that's an official name or just whether, you know, they like the poetry of it too, the Old Slow Coach Road. So I like the name, so that made me look into it a bit more. And yeah, I mean, I've driven along it. Not all the way, because you will get blown up at certain points along it. But it goes from, currently, as a byway, it goes from Serrington, which is on the edge of... I can never get these two names right. Whichever village the Till ends up going through, which is either Stapleford or Stowford, and they always confuse me.
Stapleford.
Stapleford, yes. So Sarrington is a little hamlet on the edge of Stapleford, and there's a byway there, and you can drive nearly all the way. Well, you can walk as well, or ride a horse, whatever. But, you know, if you're lazy like me, you can drive from there. It crosses the A303 just below Yarnbrook.
Yarnbury Castle.
That's not Yarnbrook. That'd be mad.
You know, you don't want to go there.
You don't want to go there. Never go to Yarnbrook. You'll be there for 6 hours. Yarnbury. So it goes, yeah. And then heads from Yarnbury up to the kind of northwest or westish of Tilshead. And then it gets lost in the Western Plain, permanently red flagged, blowing up area.
So, hang on, let me just check my understanding here. So, at Yarnbury, you go to the
Yarnbury.
Yarnbury.
I didn't say Yarnbrook, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, God's sake. that's Steve's fault. So, to the east of Yarnbury Castle. So, it goes up there, and then it tracks along the western side of the landing strip at Deptford Down. Is that the one you're talking about?
I don't know, because I haven't noticed on the maps a landing strip at Deptford Down.
Okay, well, there's a byway, so if you come past the Yarnbury Castle and just kind of carry on, you get to a junction of tracks.
Yeah, a lot of tracks all arrive.
Yeah, it's like it's a crossroads. There's four tracks sort of combined there. The one to your left, which heads back towards Wiley, you can't drive down, basically, because the farmer there has blocked it with a blooming great tree trunk to stop hare courses. They've had terrible problems on that farm with hare courses. But if you take the next one that heads sort of northwest, that's a byway, and you can drive it, and off-roaders frequently drive it. It goes right along the edge of Deptford Down, which is a huge, great, long, grassy field, which is what it looks like, but it's actually an active airstrip.
Right.
And that comes out onto the B390, which is the road between Shrewton and Chitton.
Yes, that's right.
So that's the one you're talking about, is it?
Yes, so I think it's the one on the east. I mean, I haven't got a map, and I'm just doing this from visual memory.
Okay.
So you've got Yarnbury Castle. I think on the east there's a track that goes up, and then just a bit further up from Yarnbury Castle there's another junction, and the one on the left would take you to Warminster through Chitton. So
that was the one I was talking about.
Yeah, the old Salisbury to Warminster Road.
Okay.
And the Sarum Road goes off from there and carries on across, still carries on across the B, whatever. And, but then goes near Cope Hill Down.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
and heads up towards Breaches Cottages or something.
Yeah, this is now Breach Hill, I think, on the map.
Yeah, Breach Hill.
So it goes to the west of Cope Hill.
Yes, west of Cope Hill.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. I'm looking on the map, you see, as I'm talking. So
yes, Yeah, you can afford to do that, but I've still got my blogs up in case you ask me a particular question and I can nip into my blogs.
So Breach Hill is on the road between Chitton and Tilshead.
That's right,
So
it goes across
and
the
then it carries straight over there into the danger area.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you're onto the Imber Range there and Chapperton Down and places
Chapperton
like that.
Chapperton Down, that's right. Yeah. And then it goes through there and then comes out near New Zealand Farm.
Yeah.
And then heads on towards Tinhead from there. And then
so when it drops down Salisbury Hollow into the edge of sort of Eddington, where does it go from there, do we know?
Well, it's a bit tricky, and certainly without a map, it's difficult to say. But it heads towards Steeple Ashton, I believe.
Yeah.
And then into Trowbridge, and then Bradford-on-Avon and then Bath, I think, is the route. But the exact roads, I'm not entirely sure. I leave that for other researchers.
So just going back to the roads from Stapleford, Sarrington, Stapleford, and Yarnbury Castle, that one. And where it sort of forks off left as opposed to right. There were along the side of Deptford Down landing strip, there are a couple of milestones there. Would that have been a turnpike?
No. Well, it may have been turnpiked in this, and then this turnpiked at some point. But certainly the old road from Salisbury to Sarum got its milestones before the turnpike era. So I don't believe that road was completely turnpiked from Salisbury to Bath. Bits of it were at the western end, at the Eddington end. In fact, there is still a marker on the at the Sarrington end, which says that the byway ends here. Oh, sorry, the turnpike ends here. Which I think I took a photograph of. But yes, Stapleford Road ends here, it says. It's a little marker about a mile out of Sarrington.
Never noticed that.
Yeah, it's very small, but yeah, if the grass is long, you may not see it. So it's an interesting little stone because you don't think about these things being marked, and it being important to know where the turnpike ends and where the trustees' limits are. But yeah, those things are marked.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the post on the website, and you've got a photograph of that.
Yes. Yeah.
Which very clearly says
Yeah.
ends here. It's
Yeah.
fascinating.
And of course, the other interesting thing about Stapleford, whilst we're down that way, is the link. Well, it's the castle, and which was owned by Jane Seymour's family, as in Henry VIII's wife.
Oh, that's the Bailey. Is it Ring and Bailey marked on the
Ring and
map?
Bailey, yeah,
Yeah.
which. You can still see the earthworks.
Isn't it in someone's garden now or something?
Yeah, well, it's just behind the farmhouse there, so you can't get to the Ring and Bailey. But you just across the field, you can very clearly see the earthworks. But it's all sort of covered in trees now. But yeah, that was where, as I say, Jane Seymour's family had that. So I think I wrote in my blog about that. So about the Till Valley.
Yeah.
It's the thought of Henry VIII popping down to see his in-laws is quite appealing. It somehow I don't think happened.
That is very much a hidden Wiltshire thing. I mean, you can live here for most of your life. I mean, I got born and raised in Wiltshire, but I didn't know about that. I only saw it when I was looking at something else to do with the till. I think I'd seen those markings on the houses as you drive down from Streeton and various other places. You can see markings for the Great Flood of whatever.
Yeah, next door to us, flood cottages there. The
And I
houses
saw
next
those
to us.
markings. And I didn't know about that either. It was one of those things I discovered driving around. I didn't know about the Great Flood, and that got me looking at the till, and its confluence with the Wylye and all that type of thing. And it was then I saw that Ring and not Bailey rings
Ring and Bailey,
on the map, and I thought I never knew.
yeah.
So this is why this blog is here, really, isn't it? It's to
It
point
is,
out.
and every time I think, how much more time have we got before we complete this Hidden Wiltshire project, you suddenly realise that it's probably never going to be
We never
complete.
will, no. No.
Because, I mean, Wiltshire's such a big county, and there is so much stuff which is just hidden that even people that have lived here, like you say, all their lives, are still finding some of these things.
Yes.
So, Steve, going back to the Northern Ridgeway, and you mentioned it a couple of times, Casterly Castle.
Yeah.
What do we know about that?
Very actually, I've not read a lot about Casterly Castle. It's a univalet structure, so it's only got one ditch, I believe, one bank and a ditch. So, and it's not, its views aren't that good. I mean, you two probably know it, so you've probably been there. It's not like it's set up on a prominent hill with a bit, it's not like, I mean, Sidbury is an amazing hillfort with the most amazing. I mean, I've never even been up the top of Sidbury, but even from its flanks, you can see miles. You can see anybody coming with their spear to bonk you over the head.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see Sidbury from Blackheath actually when you. It's very prominent. But
Very important.
Casterly is it's regarded as what they call an Iron Age hill fort, but it's not. I wouldn't say when they use the term hill fort for any sort of enclosure that's Iron Age. In reality, it's probably not a fort. It's probably some kind of an animal enclosure. It reminds me very much of Nut Castle, which again is a univillate hill fort in inverted commas, but it's probably some kind of an animal enclosure rather than anything that's defensive, just because of its location.
Casterly is pretty substantial in terms of its
It's
size, though.
huge.
It
You know,
is,
it's
yeah.
a big plot of land. I mean, you do get from the views up there to the east are pretty extensive. In fact, they are to the west, across Blackheath. I mean, the earthworks now are. There's not a lot to be seen. It's obviously over the millennia, it's sort of been worn away, probably ploughed, I guess, at some point. So it's not the most impressive looking camps. As you say, Glyn, it could well have been just a very large animal enclosure. I got a feeling I read somewhere there's were there Roman settlements there, or I just made that up? I've got a book about this,
Yeah,
and there
though
was.
there was. There was. I mean, I think it's been dated as sort of late Iron Age, stroke Romano-British.
That makes
There's
sense.
probably.
There's a lot of Romano-British on the Blackheath, especially on that end of the Blackheath. So.
As you've been talking, I've looking at my 1 to 25,000 map, and that hole on the Lark Hill impact area, which is to the east of the Blackheath Road, the Spine Road. I mean, everywhere that's just dotted around, earthworks, enclosures, tumulus. My eye has just landed on something called Long Ditch, and it's literally everywhere. Field systems. I mean, there's clearly, and I think Glyn, you and I have said before, the population here, where now it's, as we said, it's great sort of wilderness, this great empty space. There would have been a fair amount of human activity there, 2, 3, 4, 5 thousand years ago. This well, not heavily populated, but you'd have seen more people out there than you do today, that's for sure.
They were working that land. They were building earthworks, digging out things. The land was being used. There was obviously a settlement up there. And it's the same when you go right to the other side of the plain over towards Nook. When you go up in those two Romano-British villages by Nook Castle, you get the same thing. You're up there, it's very quiet and peaceful, very underpopulated because there's only the odd house or farm, not much human activity at all. But at one point, it would have been, relatively speaking, bustling with human activity. So it's very strange to go up there now and experience that sort of peace and quiet and eeriness and bleakness. When the sun shines, it can be, an interesting place. When it's very dark and dingy and wet, it can be quite eerie. But it's a absolutely fascinating landscape, and of course, for those guys that travel around these places with cameras, it offers endless possibilities of photography.
Well, let's put it like this. For 11 years since I've got back into digital, well, back into photography when I got a new digital camera. For 11 years, I've been going up Salisbury Plain, just taking the same pictures, essentially, in different light, different weather. Anybody's following, has ever followed my Flickr page will know that I'm utterly obsessed with the Charlton clumps in
Yeah,
different
places.
light and different stages of leaf,
Yeah,
So.
and I've seen some of your shots recently on Twitter as well, where you go up at a different week and you get something else and stick them up, and they're always definitely worth a look.
And I think the plane is worth a look in all weathers. So I will happily go out in the rain of a weekend to try and capture that as you say, bleakness and grey, huge grey emptiness, and you know, maybe a bit more difficult to make photographs work in that situation. But I think it's nice to know, as it were, to be aware that the plane is not just a sunny place, you know.
Yeah.
And it was once a... You can imagine people, you know, taking their cows to Salisbury with devices and thinking, oh, God, I've got to go across the Blackheath in the middle of winter with horizontal rain blowing against them, you know.
And I think you said earlier, Steve, that, you know, when it comes to photographing it, you know, it is actually really difficult to make a, you know, an effective and interesting photograph because of that. You know, it's high up. It's a plateau. In places, it's quite flat. Although we have got these sort of, you know, deep, you know, back to bottoms again, Glyn. But there are combes everywhere in certain places. But you haven't got any sort of, you know, as photographers, you tend to sort of, you know, the classic approach is to look for a bit of foreground interest and then something in the middle ground and then something off in the distance. But it's very difficult to find foreground interest out here.
Which is why you tend to go for the trees and the clumps.
Yes, often. Yeah, and the skies, of course.
And the big skies. Is the thing. I mean, it's obviously a good sunset over Salisbury Plain with clouds and things is a delight. But also looking for those curves, trying to get the shadows in the curves of the coombs,
yeah,
will often be a way of bringing interest into the photographs.
Yeah.
The other thing that is, though, and I think it's worth mentioning the wildlife at this point.
Yes.
Because for many photographers, I mean, if we're talking about hidden stuff, it's not only the hidden delights of... I think I've said delight about 15 times now. I'm going to stop saying delight. For photographers and, you know, just for general nature lovers and bird watchers, is that Salisbury Plain has many rare birds that you won't see without going to obscure, you know, RSPB reserves. You know, we get stone curlews, hen harriers, Montagu's harriers.
Montagu's, yeah.
Curlews coming to breed from the coast. Red kites, a go-go, buzzards.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very... Oh, and recently, the great red deer herd.
Yes, yeah.
Which... Has that mystery been solved? Or are they still out there?
I haven't seen them for the last week, but they were hanging around for quite some time within a couple of miles along the edge of the Ridgeway. They were on the Eastern Plain at one point, over by Kate Bush's copse, as I shall now call it. but as I say, I didn't see them last week.
Didn't they escape?
The mystery is that the only mystery left for me is that I haven't cleared up yet with the man from the mammal group. Is this one escaped herd, or is it a herd that is slowly built up from escapees? Because he said they were escapees, and I just thought, oh yeah, well, it's one big escape. But later I thought, could it be actually a series of escapees that have all come together with a herd? So
yeah,
I really need to clear that up at some point.
And of course, the one rare bird that you haven't mentioned is the great bustard.
Oh yes, well, possibly because it's being bred, so in a way I don't think of it as wild, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I guess.
Although it's spectacular.
Yeah, and of course they are now breeding the wild out there. It's now self-sustaining flock, if that's the right word. And I mean, you know, it's no great secret because they publicise this themselves. But if south of Casterly Castle, if you follow that track to the east of the at Lark Hill Range, you'll find the hide and the pens where they rear young birds. The release site is out that way as well, so it's not unusual to see bustards grazing in the fields.
Yes, and they flock. Yeah, so
they do. Yeah.
So you do tend to, you don't just tend to see one; you tend to see many. And it's all, they're great when they fly. They look like weird prehistoric monsters.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a sight worth seeing.
Absolutely extraordinary bird, it really is.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, I should also mention that many of these birds are protected, and so don't go trying to get as close as possible to a stone curlew.
No, that's very important.
Yeah.
And it is an offence. So,
yeah.
And if you take a photograph, which looks like you were in the field with them, and then stick it on social media, you could find yourself in a lot of trouble.
Well, I once managed to upset the guys at Wiltshire Birds, the Ornithological Trust or whatever, because I sent them a photograph of a stone curlew and said, oh, look, very early stone curlew. And I said, I couldn't creep up on it anymore. And they really thought I meant that I'd got in the field and crept up on it. What I meant was actually it landed right, because the thing is, on Salisbury Plain, they will land by the road.
Yeah.
One of the tracks. They landed by a track in exactly the direction I was driving. So I was trying to very slowly drive by it, and that's what I meant by crept up, you know, not that I'd got in the field and gone creeping off.
Yeah.
So you do have to be careful. It's keeping dogs on a lead is not just because people want to, you know, constrain what you do on the plain. It's because there are places on the plain where there are very rare birds, such as Montagu's harriers, of which only something like 10 pairs a year come to the UK. And
yeah, I saw one the week before last.
Did you see one?
Yeah, over at Parsonage Down, where I volunteered, flew right over us.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because we've got the hen harrier field there, where we're trying to reintroduce nesting hen harriers onto Salisbury Plain, because they used to nest here. They are migrant visitors, so we've got this big project to reintroduce them, and we had one sort of overwintering, a male who's now gone, but we were doing some work out there about 10 days ago, and a Montagu's flew right over us, which is very ironic.
Very nice as well.
Montagues were nesting on the eastern side of the plain, but there's a
Certainly for the last few, I didn't see any last year, obviously, because of lockdown, so I didn't get out quite as often, and I don't know if there were any last year.
Well, there's a couple who, like me, are volunteers for Natural England, and they've been monitoring that population for about 10 years, and they said that this last year was the first year they haven't seen any, which is
right.
Very sad.
Yes. Yeah. But yes, the Eastern Plain is the place to see the Montagues in general.
Mm.
That's where whenever I've seen one, it's been over there.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last time I got my off-roader stuck was because I saw a Montagues Harrier and was keeping my eye on the Montagues Harrier and drove into some ruts that were too deep for my wheels.
Of course.
Entertaining.
So you need a winch.
I did need a winch that day. I take lots of blocks of wood out with me, essentially, so that I can try and get my wheels up onto the blocks of wood.
Okay. Well, I think we've reached the end of our time slot, so we'll call it a day for this discussion about Salisbury Plain. We may be back to talk about other parts of it in the future. But yeah, I just wanted to send a huge thanks to Steve for dialing in, or whatever we call it with this system.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Whatever it is. It just works occasionally.
Yeah, press the red button.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely fascinating. Thank you, Steve.
That's okay. It's been fun.
Oh, that means you're coming back.
We'll do it again sometime. I think I coped okay. I'll try not to use the word lovely quite as much.
Or delightful. Was it delightful?
Or delightful.
Or delight, yes, whatever.
Okay, so that was an interesting experience having a guest on. I'm sure we'll do it again. But now just the usual wrap-ups, Paul.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, a reminder about the Lower Boots offer, lower.co.uk, and then HW for Hidden Wiltshire, 20 for your 20% discount. Thanks to Steve Dixon for the music. This week's, I don't know what goes on in Steve's head, but the transition music that we use in the middle there is called Holger the Can Man. So if you go to the gallery to meet Steve as part of all Marlborough Studios, ask him what on earth that's all about. I've got no idea. So thanks, Steve. Show notes and links will be on the website, which I think I'll have time to do before I leave for Norway or wherever it was I was going. I think that is it. There was something else I was going to mention, and I can't remember. Oh, next episode. We don't know, do we?
I was going to say,
we haven't thought that far ahead.
The next episode will be in 2 weeks, and at the moment it's a mystery. Yeah. So we haven't decided what we're going to talk about.
We haven't thought about it, have we?
All right, everybody. Okay. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye for now.